Don, can you hear me?
Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, I can.
Okay.
I can.
And welcome to today's show on This Week in College Basketball. We got a great show today. We're going to be talking about Missouri, the Missouri situation in Missouri football. Hi, my name is Clay Dade. I'm your host, and we've got a lot to cover here in just 30 minutes. We're going to be talking to one of the country's most recognizable sports attorneys who has been at the forefront in cases involving student-athletes, NCAA student-athletes, for many, many years. Don Jackson, based in Montgomery, Alabama. Before we bring him aboard and bring him on, we just kind of want to update the situation. For those of you that have been under a rock, of course, Monday morning news broke that at the University of Missouri, the Missouri president, Tim Wolf, resigned his position as leader and president of the university as a result of his admitted inaction and lack of response and address to allegations of racism by black students on campus. A campus culture that that has been said to be inappropriate and attributed to many, many instances of prejudice and overt racist actions and verbal attacks, if you will. So we're going to discuss what the impact of the Missouri football team was on this in this situation. It's unprecedented in the history of college athletics where student athletes have come together and impacted the ouster of a university president. We want to remind you that you can catch all This Week in College Basketball episodes via podcast. Go to blogtalkradio.com/NCAA Hoops. That's blogtalkradio.com/NCAA Hoops to access any of our podcast shows, episodes, as well as archive shows with great guests. We're coming upon the opening of the start of the college basketball season, the new 2015-2016 season. And we've got a lot in store for you, a lot of great storylines for this year's season coming up. And some of the biggest we'll be discussing here this week. But we want to get started with our guest today, Don Jackson. Don Jackson, once again, is a longtime veteran, successful attorney, sports lawyer who focuses on student athletes at the NCAA in NCAA Division I, II, and III of all sports, not just the major revenue sports. He's been successful in having cases, winning cases against the NCAA, and this is a unique situation. We want him to weigh in on and get his thoughts. Don, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Clay.
Yeah. Don, explosive situation in Columbia, Missouri, at the University of Missouri this week. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on the outcome and on the whole scenario as it kind of built up and over the past week or so, and even more, with the young student Jonathan Butler embarking on a hunger strike. Tell me about your thoughts, and we want to hear from you on you have a lot of experience with regard to student athletes' empowerment.
I thought it was an action that's been building for quite some time. I mean, frankly, I've anticipated that at a certain point with efforts to unionize on Northwestern's campus, the O'Bannon lawsuit, you've got a constant. I think there's been a recognition over the last several years of the power and leverage that student athletes actually have on college campuses, and I was happy to see this group of student athletes at University of Missouri take this action, because the reality of the matter, above and beyond the fact that they are representatives of the university, representatives of their family, they're also men and women, young men and women that have interests outside of and beyond college athletics. This was, I think, a significant step of in college athletics, because it was a display of unity and a recognition of the actual power that these student athletes have on college campuses now.
Why did it take so long?
You know, that's a very good question. Candidly, I mean, several years ago, student athletes at Grambling engaged in a similar protest over issues within Grambling University's athletic department, football program specifically, and on campus there. There was another incident back in this was in the mid '60s with AFL football players at an All Star game in New Orleans that threatened to, well, they actually did boycott the All Star game, and it had to be moved to Houston because of the fact that black players couldn't live in hotels in New Orleans. I mean, it's for the last 20 or 30 years. Since the John Carlos, Tommy Smith era, since the Muhammad Ali era, and the era of professional and student athletes that were more politically active, there's been an effort. You hear this all the time that politics and sports should be kept separate. That they're two separate. Realms of life, but the reality of the matter is that's not the case, and I've personally wondered for the last 20 some. I'm a former college athlete. I personally wondered for the last 20 or so years why student athletes, and for that fact, even to some degree, on the professional level, why they were hesitant to use the leverage of their fame, use the leverage of the attention that they grab on the field and on the court. And I'm just happy to see that in this particular situation that they recognize the amount of power that they had and they use it in a productive way.
Why would you what do you attribute what I've long called almost a psychological malaise or a psychological grip that student athletes as young people are kind of, that they have embedded in them? Do they believe that they're just there to play sports and that they are not there to be a threat to the status quo or to challenge authority or to be empowered, even when college campuses for years historically in this country have been bastions for social activism and student activism, yet it seems like athletes are almost operating in a vacuum where they're afraid to speak out, afraid to stand out on issues of right and wrong, or especially in a situation like this where they actually closed ranks with fellow students, regular so-called normal students, certainly black students, predominantly black football team, the minority of black students on campus at the University of Missouri, and ironically, a faculty walkout was something that was threatened by just all faculty, not black faculty, all faculty at the University of Missouri. Talk to me about the solidarity and then also about this seemingly psyche of student athletes who seem to be gripped by maybe fear or just apathy.
I think there's a historical context in that, because the reality of the matter is now high-level student athletes or high-level athletes almost from the time they're 7, 8, 10 years old, kids that are baseball players that play travel ball in the summer, kids that are basketball players that play AAU basketball all throughout the summer, kids that are football players that spend their summer times going to camps all over the country. I mean, almost from 8 to 9 years old, their entire lives are dominated now by athletic participation. In the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, kids that went on to play college sports, professional sports, they had summer jobs. They did in college, they did internships during the summertime. They had a level, they were exposed to a level of political, cultural, even social immersion that's really not so available to them now, because sports has become, on the college level, even on the high school level, sports has become a 12 month a year essentially venture for kids. And as a result of that, a lot of the political skills, social awareness, political awareness that student athletes in another generation gained, these kids, that unfortunately kids now, unless it's a very unique situation, they're not being exposed to that. And as a result of that, there's almost a tendency for them to see themselves as athletes first, citizens of the world second. And that's a dangerous, that's unfortunately not so positive view on athletics. And let's just be candid about it. The other issue is a lot of coaches on the high school level, on the college level, are not receptive to having student athletes that are politically active, politically engaged in the way that these student athletes are right now. And I mean, I've heard this over and over and over again, talk with people, sports radio shows, and even people involved in sports attempting to separate athletes from politics, when the reality of the matter is there's been a connection between athletics and politics going back over a century. And then obviously if you look at the role that athletes like Jack Johnson and Joe Lewis played in sports back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, I mean, there's always been that level of connection. Paul Robeson, Jackie Robinson, and the list goes on. Unfortunately, now African American athletes, in particular, there's been athletes generally, but the focus here is on African American athletes. There's been an effort to sort of dissuade them from political expression. Bill Walton participated in an anti-war protest while he was at UCLA. And even as an NBA player with the Portland Trail Blazers, wore a ponytail, had all of the physical appearance and sensibilities of an early 1970s hippie. That type of political expression has become sort of taboo in the sports world. These players had the courage, had the political awareness to step outside of that.
Don, Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports wrote a very compelling article this morning. The title was "Missouri Protest Exposes NCAA's Greatest Fear." And he talks about the empowerment of student athletes. Is their greatest fear, do you believe, the empowerment of student athletes, or the empowerment in the recognition and realization by black student-athletes of their leverage and power and clout that they can wield? It was 32 black football players on the University of Missouri football team that stood up, and the football coach, Pinkel, got behind them and stood locked arms, the famous tweeted picture. We're going to talk about that, the impact of social media. They didn't even do anything but send out a tweet, and it reverberated and went viral. What's their greatest fear? What's the NCAA's
I think it's the latter. I mean, because let's face it, there are institutional elements within the system, within college athletics, that disproportionately impact African American athletes. Initial eligibility rules, application of NCAA amateurism legislation, all of these things affect African Americans in a disproportionately negative way. And that's been a battle that I've been engaged in for well over a decade now. A recognition by African American student athletes of their leverage on even issues like that and the threat of collective action, like what we were about to see in this situation, the threat of that collective action does sort of shift. It shifts the paradigm of college sports. And in some respects, it's a shifting of the economic paradigm as well, because now these players recognize, at least in this University of Missouri situation, they recognized not just their cultural and social importance on that campus, but their economic importance to the University of Missouri. Let's face it, the decision by the board or alumni or boosters at University of Missouri, the decision by this president to step aside and the chancellor to step aside was not a decision that he made without some urging from third parties. Alumni base there, they recognized the economic impact that this might have had on not sure. just the football program, but the university as well.
Sure. I mean, the reports have said that an estimated or projected $1 million would have been lost to the university had these athletes not played this coming weekend.
It would have been considerably more than one. I mean, we're talking $1 million in the short term as far as this football game is
sure.
concerned this weekend.
Sure.
But had they opted sure. not to play, it would have impacted recruiting for the next year. It might have impacted recruiting in the basketball program. It might have impacted even applications for admissions by both African American and students from other races. So it would have had an impact well beyond this football game this weekend. There was a recognition of that, and as a result of that, there was in all likelihood some pressure from third parties for the president and chancellor to leave. Student athletes were the primary were the center of the wheel here. The power of these student athletes impacted all of these different constituencies all over that campus and all over the state of Missouri.
And so that kind of points to Sonny Vaccaro was interviewed for the Dan Wetzel article. And at the very end of the article, he's quoted as saying, if the athletes don't play, the pyramids fall. How do you respond to that? Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I will. I mean, if we look at college football all over the South, on any given weekend in college towns all over the South, and primarily small college towns, you have over 100,000 people coming into towns like Tuscaloosa, like Auburn for college football weekends. The amount of revenue that's generated by college football in a Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in Columbia, in Gainesville, Florida, in Athens, Georgia.
Restaurants.
Yeah. Oh, no question. A gas tax, lodging tax, the amount of revenue that's driven by these college weekends, $1 million is just the $1 million impact that everyone's focused on is probably 10% of the economic impact of this game this weekend, plus the long-term residual damage of it.
We're talking with Don Jackson here on This Week in College Basketball, our guest today. Today we're talking about the Missouri situation and Missouri football players' involvement in the protests there on campus that has led to the resignation of the university president. Don Jackson, noted sports attorney, longtime advocate of student-athlete rights, and he's based in Montgomery, Alabama, and a University of Virginia Law School grad. Don, go ahead. Go right ahead.
You know, I mean, the long-term impact of a player boycott, $1 million, I would guess, would probably be 5% of the overall impact that a player boycott might have had on the university, on that town. This weekend, obviously, the game is in Kansas City, so it wasn't a quote home football game, but at least not on campus football game. But the overall impact of this boycott would have greatly exceeded $1 million for this university.
And when we look at kind of the macro view of this, a friend of mine said, "Well, Clay, you know, I'm all for anything that stands up against racism and prejudice. However," and this is a former athletic director at a Division I school and at a black school, as a matter of fact, in the SWAC, Southwestern Athletic Conference. He feared that they left some things on the table, that the protest wasn't, you know, kind of complete and as organized and comprehensive. Could they have used this as a platform during the protest to get more lasting change on the campus and within the university's leadership and addressing various inadequacies and things that need to be more addressed within black student culture on campus, more black faculty, for example, or more focus on more presence of blacks in leadership positions within campus administration, and
those were things that they were requesting. That they were requesting. I mean, all of these issues are not going to be solved. overnight. But an increase in the number of black faculty members. Efforts to go out and recruit more African American students, those were things that were a part of this protest. I mean, because for example, the black student enrollment at University of Missouri now had dipped to around 8%. Well, that's occurring in universities all over the country where you're starting to see decreasing numbers of African American students. Well, one of the things that needed to be a priority there was the university needed to be more proactive in making efforts to go out and recruit African American students, offer financial aid to high level students on the academic side, and make more significant efforts to retain students once they get there. All of these things were a part of the group of demands that were being made by protesters out there. It wasn't just an issue of an uncomfortable, you know, of a racially uncomfortable environment. There were other things that went along with that. And yeah, I do think this is a positive step in the right direction as far as it's, accomplishing all of the things that they're hoping to accomplish here.
And so, Don, when we talk about a message sent, I tweeted yesterday that this is a shot across the bow, a real message sent loud and clear by students and by black athletes, black student athletes, NCAA players. Pat Forte wrote an article today saying that Missouri players stand put schools around the country on notice. How do you kind of weigh in on that? How do you feel about that? The Gary Pinkel, the head coach at Missouri, unprecedented as a coach to stand behind players. You've dealt with eligibility issues and student athletes' rights with regard to coaches who defiantly block transfers of students, student athletes who want to leave their team and go somewhere else. This is something that you have been actively engaged in, making sure athletes don't get held up in that process by coaches. Were you surprised by Gary Pinkel's support for his athletes, his black athletes? And also, do you think this opens the pathway to more coaches recognizing their need to stand up and support black student athletes and athletes in general with athletes' rights?
In this situation, I don't think this coach had any choice, because the reality of the matter is it was quite clear that situation was developing in a way where he was either going to support this large number of players on his team, or he was going to run the risk of losing his team. And had that happened, it really would not have mattered whether he what his position was, because he likely was not going to be there a year from now. And I think he took the correct approach, but he took the approach that was the only approach that he could under the circumstances. Had he been talking about 2, 3, 5 players, obviously he likely would have taken an entirely different situation, a different stance. No matter what, you know, the level of credibility of their demands were, I mean, he likely would have taken a different stance. This situation should have been an eye opener to any program, any major program around the country. The reality of the matter is the kinds of circumstances that led to this situation at University of Missouri exist on quite a number of campuses all over the country at the Power Five level. An absence of African American faculty, absence of African American administrators, periodic racial incidents on campus, decreasing African American enrollment. Those kinds of circumstances exist on a number of campuses around the country. Some university administrations are more proactive in trying to address those issues than others. The ones that are not proactive in attempting to address those issues now, I think, as a result of this, now they have to be more aware of potential consequences, because I don't think this is going to be the last time. Excuse me. It's interesting. I teach two sports law classes at Cumberland School of Law, Samford University in Birmingham. And in the early part of this semester, in an amateur sports class, we had a discussion about exactly this issue, about player boycotts. And I predicted at that time that it would occur in the next several years, but I predicted that it would be a basketball team and not a football team. And the reason being because of the fact that I felt that it was more difficult to get 85 to 100 players operating in lockstep to engage in a collective action. It would be easier to get 12 to 15 on the same page, and that I felt it was more likely that it would be basketball and not football. Well, I was wrong in two regards. One, it didn't take 2, 3 years for it to occur, and second, it was football. I don't think this will be the last time.
Don, we've got about a minute left. We want to switch this. Great talking with you today about the Missouri situation. We've got about a minute. We want to turn this back to basketball. We got a lot of listeners. Sure. They're excited about the opening of the new season. Kansas freshman Shaikh Diallo, you're representing him in his eligibility. Is he going to make it? Is he going to get cleared? We got about
formally got involved in the case yesterday. Representing his guardian who brought him, who assisted him in coming to the United States. Totally, just getting familiarized with all the issues there. It is certainly my hope that the young man is cleared and allowed to get on the floor this year. I think it's a travesty what's happening, not just to this young man, but to another youngster at Syracuse, Taco Fall at Central Florida, 7'6" young man from Senegal. I mean, these cases, they go right back to the issue that I addressed earlier. A selective application of NCAA legislation to international players and minorities. And these are the kinds of cases that ultimately will lead to further collective action.
We want to get more into this with Don Jackson, noted sports attorney based in Montgomery, Alabama, has fought the NCAA for many years on behalf of student athletes. We want to thank you, Don, today for joining us on This Week in College Basketball. Folks, join us again. Thanks again, Don, and take care.
Thank you for having me.